Good, thank you. Thank you, Liska. Appreciate the introduction. It's good to see everyone. And we're going to talk about kind of state of the art COVID. We'll do a little bit of, about influenza since we're in that period of time as well. And I thought I would just kind of take it around the kind of the, you know, three, was it 365 days traveling around the world, or you know, it's the sort of things that I need to know frequently. And I frequently have these conversations with patients on a not infrequent basis. So it's the sort of things I think either you or your family members or friends frequently will come up with and want to know. So that's what I'm going to do for about 25 minutes at most. And then we'll just kind of open it up for questions there. And if I gave this talk a year ago, I called it the good, the bad, and the ugly. Now, the only reason I sometimes said good is because I'm an optimist. So I always have to have the good in there. But, you know, in 2 years ago, it was certainly kind of bad and ugly. And then it was probably good, bad, and ugly. I would say the overall sentiment that I would have today is, good, sometimes ugly, and less bad. Good, less bad, sometimes ugly. So that's better. And then I'm going to show you kind of how and why, you know, I think that. I will say that my opinion is not endorsed by the CDC, Department of Health and Human Services, the World Health Organization, or anyone. Even my wife might not endorse it, but I do think it's informed, and I hope you'll think so too. So I wanted just to start off by looking at data on where we're kind of at in North Carolina, and there'll be caveats to almost everything. And the North Carolina Department of Health and Human Services has a dashboard that they update weekly, and they've been doing it weekly for a couple months now. And they have certain indicators that I look at, and I look at this chart weekly as well to let us know kind of how we're doing by various barometers in terms of COVID in North Carolina. And it would not be really any different around the country. Some people earlier, some are later. The only thing that really reflects differently is the level of vaccination in a state. If you are in a low vaccination state, it looks worse. If you're a high vaccination state, it looks better. But it doesn't, you know, that those are the big things there. One of the first things they look at is COVID-19 in wastewater. And the dashboard here, which it looks like that, yeah, it, and that's because when people flush tissues down the, you know, and the and other things, urine, feces, there's COVID that's in all of these elements there. And so they look into wastewater and they get a pretty good accurate picture of what's happening in a community. And the COVID in the wastewater is frequently more sensitive than testing by a matter of a couple weeks. So when we see wastewater going down, we can feel pretty confident that within 2 weeks, cases are going down. When wastewater is going up, cases are going to go up. And so if we were to look at COVID in wastewater, we can see that, you know, we had the large peak in 2021, the large peak in early 22. And then we started peaking again after lows in March of 22 to these numbers that increased to in the early summer and stayed pretty high actually throughout the summer. Interestingly enough, if you look at the lows, we were at like 1 million particles in wastewater. And so we can see that from the moderate highs in the late summer, we've started to decrease pretty consistently, though not exponentially. So that today we have 12.1 million particles in wastewater compared to 2 months ago when we had 28 million. So, you know, that's good. It continues to slowly decrease. It's not happening as fast as we want. And what this tells us is that there's a lot of COVID still in this community. And we're going to see that in a second. You probably know that because of your friends and perhaps yourselves. It's really everywhere still. There's a lot of COVID in the community. Emergency room visits, which would suggest both COVID that's more severe, people who are unvaccinated getting COVID, so followed this pattern to some extent here, but it has been decreasing pretty much for about 2 months, from about 8.5% of emergency room visits, now down to about 4% of emergency room visits. So it's not like, at one point in time, we had almost 1 out of 4 patients in the emergency room because of COVID, and the capacity of that of the hospital system. If you look here now in hospital admissions, you know, we had over 4,200 patients in North Carolina with COVID back in a year ago, and it's down to 834 now. Previous week was 970. Those are pretty much consistent in terms of percentages of people who get COVID, at least in terms of unvaccinated. But then again, there are less and less unvaccinated people who haven't had COVID. And so that becomes a complicating factor here. But again, those who are sick enough to get into the hospital, and again, we're on a decrease. But if you think about that throughout the pandemic, close to 2% of people, 1 to 2%, and maybe close to 1% of people get COVID could die from it. And then we have 834 people in the hospital. You can see it's still a lot of people dying from COVID. That is still a fact there. This number of cases in a week, so you want to figure out how many cases in a day, divide it by 7. Here, it was 10, almost 11,000, down from 15. The problem with the numbers of the number of cases they're reporting, or that's the number of PCR cases they get. I would say probably a third to a half of cases now are not PCR. They're just diagnosed at home tests, and those never make their way in here. So that's why I think this wastewater is a better barometer if you really want to kind of follow what's happening here. So I do think cases are down, but they're still at a much higher level than perhaps we would think. Do cases go down 33% in 1 week? And here is 10,000, and we were at 34,000 and 200% in those 2 months. Well, they've gone down. I just don't think they've gone down that much, knowing that how many people are testing positive still. But it still is good because hospital admissions are down. The vaccine and booster aspect is such a critical issue still here. The population in North Carolina, this has been more stagnant than we would probably like. 60% are boosted there. Almost 80% of adults are vaccinated, 30% of children and teens. You know, compared to obviously last January, we're in such a different place here. So it bodes well for going forward that we're learning to live with the disease than living despite the disease there. And we'll see that even more so. I thought it'd be useful just to look at the variants because it's very interesting. Besides being a beautifully, colorfully challenged graph there, we can see if we go back towards the beginning and we had a Delta variant that took hold over a year ago, and it really predominated for most of 2021 into early 22. And then we started to get this B1 variant that took over. And what happens is these mutations, once they get a hold, they usually have strategic advantages over the variant before, and then they start become the new variants. We see this frequently in Europe first, and it comes over here in these new variants. And so we saw the BA1.1 starting to take over earlier this year. And when we had the big wave, again, the BA1 with a less amount of the B1 there. But what happened really quite quickly is the BA2 variant came over and it took over. And then you can see as it started waning out as soon as the BA2 12.1 variants here. What we typically think of as the Omicron would be the BA5 variants here. And you can see how those started coming in early in the summer and really became the predominant variant for all this summer here. So when they talk about the Omicron booster, the recognition is it's designed to deal with the early Variants, but also this late variant here, this BA5 variant, and that's the optimism for why that booster is likely to be pretty effective now, because this later variant would not have the same degree of protection against this later variant if you use the earlier shot. So you can't even get the earlier booster shots anymore; those are really not available anymore. It's useful to look up here and see, well, what are these other variants that are going? So we have this BA4.6. And if you were to start looking for, well, what does that mean? You would see that there are new variants coming out, as they've had all along here. And there's even one up here, a little small one here, a BA2.75. So, you know, I keep an eye on that. These new variants could portend more more cases, a new wave this winter. These could, but they may not either. And I'll talk about that in a little bit here. It's not inevitable that these variants will take over like these others. It could well be that ultimately these will peter out a little bit as well here. Really, the BA5 is the major one, 80%, and this BA4.6 starts to then become over. It leads me into the booster, you know, the new shot that's been available for about 6 weeks now is both Moderna and Pfizer BioNTech. These are bivalent COVID-19 vaccines as a single booster. And we're really in a situation now where we're going to a single booster once a year. Very similar to flu vaccine. Probably the timing is going to be very similar to the flu vaccine. And we'll talk about simultaneously administration of both of those in a little bit. Either one of these vaccines is acceptable. If you've done Moderna before and you want to get the Pfizer, you certainly can. I'm not sure there's any strategic advantage. If you've done the Pfizer before and you want to get the Moderna, you can. I'm not sure there's any strategic advantage. And if you've gotten Moderna and you want to get Moderna, I'm not sure there's any real strategic advantage. There is a little bit of evidence that the Moderna might be a little better. How do you like all those caveats? Little evidence, little better. I have little faith in that, but okay. That's a little bit. So I've had the Pfizer all along. I got my Pfizer booster. I know what the side effects are. I'm comfortable with the side effects. I wouldn't say I'm comfortable because I was pretty sick for fever for 24 hours, a few sweats, headaches for about 3 days. I'm used to that now. It's been pretty consistent for me. It also means I know I'm getting a reaction. If you get no reaction, does that mean you got no immunogenicity? Well, not necessarily, but if you get a reaction, that means you definitely got some booster effects going on there. And so I just didn't personally want to subject myself to a different set of side effects that I don't, you know, it wouldn't be probably much different. You know, I'm living with the beast I know than the beast I don't know a little bit. But I think if you did it the other way, because that's what was available, you know, I couldn't get it in my local CVS. I had to go to the CVS and Cary, which was nice to see a different. And actually, I didn't get a CVS. I went to the Target in Cary. Ended up getting children's books too, which is a kind of a fun thing to do while I was out there. But that's really about it. Again, this Omicron has the BA4 and the BA5 lineages, which are felt to be the ones most likely circulating now, unless that other ones, the other two that I showed you, take over the next 2-3 weeks. Then it's unlikely. And so again, I think this suggests if you haven't had a booster, it's a great time to get a booster. You know, you can get either one of these in almost any pharmacy. There's no wait. And you can get a little Band-Aid, a little sticker. I got my booster. I don't think they gave those things. I think it's when you go voting. But in any case, I do think that it makes a huge element. The Moderna is 18 years and older. The Pfizer is 12 years of age and older. And so kids can really get these and should get these. And I'll show you data in a little bit that it does still make a huge difference getting these boosters in terms of protection if you want to protect yourself. I mean, if you don't, then That's what it'll be. And if you think about the flu vaccine every year, they modify it to try to get more protection, both from influenza A and influenza B. And I think that's really what we're moving into it. These boosters were based on data that was done in animals because they didn't have time to do it in humans. They're doing human trials now, but the animals showed pretty significant protection against not just COVID, but also against hospitalization and death. So again, these are, and you can read about these. I'm not going to spend too much more time on that, but note that I believe that these are true, and the data would suggest that that is true there. If there's any a question, I wanted to show you this particular surveillance from North Carolina that looks at in the week ending October 1st. I mentioned before we had 843 hospitalizations. We have 106 across the state in the intensive care unit. And then looking at the vaccination status of those people that are both hospitalized and in the ICU there. And we see that those who are hospitalized significantly more are unvaccinated there. So we still know that despite majority of people being vaccinated, that the unvaccinated still are the majority of people that are hospitalized there. If they didn't get the booster compared to the booster, it appears that those who got the booster are less likely to be hospitalized there. And then in terms of the ICU, so really quite sick with a very high risk of dying, the unvaccinated make up even a much larger portion of those who are really quite sick. And again, the booster appears to likely to offer some further protection. We know it is likely to decrease the chances that all the vaccinations, including the booster, to decrease the chances that you will get COVID, to decrease even more the chances that you're going to end up in the hospital, and then to decrease even more the chances that you're going to be really sick in the hospital and die there. And it just shows that that is still playing out there. And I think that's useful information to have there. We talked about, is it going to be a winter wave? Are we going to see like we have previously a large COVID, where in times where people are going to be indoor more, outdoors less, when the flu is likely to be there, when mask wearing has gone down. And I haven't spoken much about masks, but let me just say that masks continue to offer protection. So for those who want to have more protection, mask wearing should be normalized. In most settings I go, I do not see people wearing masks as a large number. I do see smaller numbers continuing to wear. And I think, again, that is fine. I think that we will see that for years to come there. I think particularly on airplanes, I've seen a lot of COVID transmission from people traveling back from Europe, a lot of COVID transmission. There are 10 hours, in airports, on planes, with a lot of people who, the majority of whom, are unmasked. So I do think, large events, football games, hockey games, where people are screaming and other things, these are concerts. These are still going to be COVID transmissible events. And for people who want to wear masks, that certainly is there. So in terms of the winter wave, what will we see there? This is not atypical. Again, we see people congregating, in large numbers for food and restaurants. So we do know that we're going to still see that. I was very interested in this COVID-19 scenario modeling hub. So it says, well, what will happen if? And I'm going to show you some of those scenarios in a couple minutes. And is it because of these new variants, or is it because immunity wanes? It's probably both, but immunity does wane there. There's some element there, but that's why we again get flu shots, because we don't have a lot of protection from the previous year, because the strains change there. So that's why I think it's going to be very similar there. And so in this particular article that was in Nature magazine, they do talk about the rise of the new variants, some of which I showed you more. Kind of look like stingrays, but this is a photomicroscope, but it's the coolest pictures in the world there. and how these immune evasions, I mentioned the BA2.75, that was the smallest number there. These are, you know, these are no different in some respects in the past. They continue to try to evade detection. But the Omicron appears to be, the booster appears to actually offer still protection against even these newer ones there, which is why I think it's really important. And then what about the new projections here? And these are complicated, but I just want to show you that there's tremendous uncertainty about what may happen this winter. Tremendous uncertainty here. So this was the scenario when they said if you got an early booster and there was no new variant, and you can see the peaks of these and all the different assumptions are much less than if there are late boosters. You get a booster in October, or you get a booster in November, December, and the new variants escape boosters, and then you get potentially very large waves here, and then you can have a late booster and no new variant, or an early booster and a new variant. I'm hoping that this early booster, no new variant, is the most reliable one, which will suggest the booster will have saved up to 11,000 lives, 875,000 hospitalizations, a lot of different things here about what booster can do there. Then there's, of course, they talk about these even more worrisome ones. I tend not to worry about those quite as much. So if you read about this XBB, this immune evasive COVID strain, I haven't seen a lot of it in the United States, can't see it in North Carolina and what's being reported yet. I mean, this comes along about every 2 to 3 months. And I just think we've kind of have seen these things happen, but at the same token, I'm hoping and believe that this is not likely here. You hear in Singapore here, and what happened, but you just see so much difference that happens with even these new ones here. So don't get too excited or too worrisome. That's my advice there. If you get COVID, you should know what's available for you other than symptomatic treatment. In the past, they said, if you got short of breath, come to the hospital, get a pulse oximeter machine at home. If your pulse oximeter was low, come into the hospital. However, there are certain medications that are available now. Paxlovid, I think, is the best medication that's available. It's available by prescription only, and it's indicated for almost 70% of people who get COVID. Now, how is that true? Because what was FDA approved for is like anyone with any chronic disease, but also anyone who's obese or overweight. Well, overweight and obese gets us to about 70% of the population. So it's approved for all those, anyone over the age of 60. That's me, okay? And what I think a physician should do is at the very least, they need to talk to you and have informed decision-making. What I've seen so much is physicians saying, oh, you don't need to take this, you're not sick. That is just false. That's like saying, don't wear your seatbelt because there's not too many cars on the highway right now. Or don't wear the seatbelt because you're a good driver. Or don't wear the seatbelt because it's not, you know, it's crazy talk, frankly. Because the way the drug works is it cuts down on replication. So it works better when you take it early. Waiting till it's late after you've gotten sick, it's just not going to work as well. So that's one crazy physician thoughts who don't really know fully how the drug works. And the other, saying you'll be okay. Well, you may be okay, but shouldn't that be a decision you get to make, not just your physician tells you? Because how can they predict if you're going to have worse COVID? What we do know is this, like Tamiflu, which is if you want to cut down on your risk of severe flu, you can do something about it. And I think that it's our responsibility to tell people that and let them think about whether or not they might want to do this. That it's FDA approved. Most of the data came from unvaccinated people, but there is increasing data on vaccinated people of some benefit from this. I've given it probably 65 times to patients, and I can tell you in almost all cases, they got better quicker and it was less severe. The turnaround was very, very quick. I've also seen two of those patients get rebound. So rebound is a possibility with this. But on the other hand, rebound's a possibility even if you get COVID. And that's what they don't tell you. So they want to say, oh, it's the drug and maybe the reason is not to take it. No, some people can have COVID for a longer period of time. And so we don't really fully know. We will say that it's 1-2%. It doesn't mean it's going to be more severe. It means you might have to isolate again there. But again, these are things. And then what about two other things? What about side effects? Turns out the most frequent one is a bad taste in your mouth. Okay, tastes like metal. That's not a fun thing. But the medication is taken for 5 days. So it'll go away. The other is drug interactions. And you need to understand that if you know, your pharmacist and your physician needs to be looking at this. Certain drugs like lipid agents, certain drugs like immunosuppressant agents, certain drugs like antibiotics, and certain drugs like blood thinners all can interact with this medicine. And for the most part, if you can hold the other medicine that you were taking while you're taking this, then that's a good thing. And you can avoid a drug interaction. But again, for most patients, that doesn't mean it stops them from taking it. And we can talk about other things for Paxlovid if we want. This is a nice article from Yale Medicine that it was updated in August, says how it works, when should I take it, how often do I take it, many other things. But this is no different than what it can be used for kids ages 6 to 17. It does appear to work against Omicron. A lot of us side effects, but very few are actually more severe than what I've just, or they're much, much rarer than what I told you about. I mentioned medications. I mentioned rebound. What else is available? Well, there are other medications available. They're the ones that were kind of older there. There is a medication antiviral called remdesivir. It's three intravenous treatments over 3 days. So they're infusions, harder to get access to, but you can get access to. And if you have not responded or you have other risk factors for a severe disease, this is something that would be considered there appears to, again, probably have some impact on COVID. It's one of the few that would outside of that. There's a monoclonal antibody that's, and as we go down the list, it's less useful. But there are some other things. And so again, depending on your health status or your family member's health status or your friend's health status, the higher risk they are, the more they need to know these sorts of information. I've not had to go to these other drugs for my patients in the last year. And again, I've probably, you know, had and seen 150 COVID, positive COVID cases in the last year. But this again is one that could be used. And then there's other ones. There was a drug by Merck that came out and was hyped a few months ago. It turned out it wasn't as effective. So maybe 30% effective versus 90% effective there. So I've not seen or have used it. And there's even a monoclonal antibody to be used, Evusheld. If you can't take a booster vaccination, so if you're exposed to COVID, you might end up taking this, like my brother-in-law who has a double lung transplant, to go on this when people around him get COVID, to make it less likely that he's going to get COVID. The last two things I'm just going to go into are about influenza. 2 years ago, the only good thing to me about 2020 was I didn't see a case of influenza in the entire flu season. Everyone was wearing masks. It was just rare schools. I mean, it just was rare. Last year, we saw more of it because there was less mask wearing. I mean, it turns out influenza is highly effective to wear mask to prevent transmission of influenza. So you want to cut down influenza? This one, wear a mask. We also don't typically see influenza in North Carolina heavily till March. Last year, we did see one peak in I want to say late November, December, and then we saw another peak in March. That was a little bit unusual. Don't usually see a whole lot there. And the reason is because influenza tends to come up to North Carolina and down to North Carolina and over from North Carolina. We're kind of one of the last places in the country, probably because, you know, coming in through Washington and Atlanta. What's interesting to me is I've never seen Georgia this high this quick. So Georgia's a hotbed right now. You can see South Carolina in proximity there is moderate. North Carolina is still low. So in terms of when do you get a flu vaccine, you know, a lot of people are doing it at the same time they're getting the COVID, and that works, and it's convenient. I tell sometimes, you know, you can wait to get your flu vaccine until we have, you know, it'll be more effective earlier rather than later in the season, as is COVID. And then that, so there's no really right or wrong. I have to get mine this, you know, before November, because that's part of UNC's requirement. Their healthcare providers have to get it there. You know, if you didn't get it till January, you should still get it, because again, we're probably not going to see our biggest peak until March there, and really continuing to encourage flu vaccinations there. CDC, and this is my last one, does have some recommendations about getting flu and COVID, and yes, you can get them at the same time. It doesn't appear to decrease the effectiveness of either one. It does appear to cause a little more side effects. I mean, your arm's going to be a little more sore. You may have a little more whatever the reaction will be. But again, it's not enough that they're actually contraindicated there. Some people are getting their COVID shot with a shingles vaccination. I personally don't really like that. That's just me. I know others are recommending it and doing it. Shingles vaccination causes something that in many respects looks and acts a little bit like COVID. You can get a really sore arm, and you can get a flu-like syndrome. And I just think the two together, unless you absolutely had to, shingles is not an emergency vaccination. So, and can be done in almost all pharmacies. So why subject yourself to something with COVID that is also could be, you know, and you just feel worse if you don't need to. But you can get it at the same time if you want the flu, and children can get COVID and a flu at the same time. So I'm going to stop sharing now, because I think we've gone around the globe of kind of COVID, where we're at, what we may get, how we can protect ourselves still, and if we get it, what we can do. And recognize that, again, I do think we are in a different space and place. I think it's good to kind of bad. I mean, it's, you know, because there's so many restrictions, so many things we have to think about, and we, you know, so many people continue to get COVID, and it's not fun. I mean, I even among the healthy people I know who are boosted, it's not fun. And I suspect I'm talking to the converted here, because probably 60 to 70% of you have gotten COVID, and you know. So let me stop and see what questions, and feel free to come off mute, and we can just have a conversation.
I had one question in regards to long COVID. Do you know, are we seeing less new cases, or what's happening with that?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So long COVID is certainly an issue, and it's particularly an issue for those whose COVID is more severe. The more severe the COVID case, the more likely you're going to have long-term effects of the COVID. And so it tends to be more of an effect in those who are unvaccinated compared to those who are vaccinated. I've seen only one case of it among someone who's vaccinated. So again, but you know, it can happen. I think because we're seeing increasing portions of the population have some, if not full, you know, vaccine and maximum immunity that they can get, we're seeing less long COVID than we would have otherwise. But I think it's you know, it's still a concern, and those people who still have significant symptoms, they should you know, really talk to their physicians. I should mention one other thing that wasn't. That I didn't, which is, you know, I still see a lot of people testing for COVID, you know, 6 days out. You know, they test themselves for COVID, say, ah, I still have COVID. You know, well, yeah, the rapid tests are going to be positive for up to 2 to 3 weeks after your diagnosis. So I do not recommend, under almost any circumstance, that you test yourself for COVID because it means nothing there. If you're 5 days without, you know, if you're 5 days in, you've had no symptoms, no fever for a couple of days, you took Paxlovid or not, you could, you know, go back in wearing a mask into most of all your activities, you know, not 10 days there without testing. Testing will be nothing. Even doing a PCR test does nothing, because again, a PCR test will still be positive at least a week after diagnosis. So again, I don't base testing on have any real value today if you have a positive test, a repeat test.
Thank you. I had a couple of comments. One person wanted me to just talk about to just remind people of when they can come to the clinic to get flu shots, and that's any day of the week, 10:30 to 2:30. Just walk on in. If you want something else, some other time, give me a call. Let me know. We'll work it out and make it happen. Then we had a question in regards to someone. If someone has never been vaccinated, what would their schedule be? Would it be the first two and followed by the latest booster? What would that look like?
Yeah, that's actually a really good question. Because that presupposes that you can still get the older ones, and I'm not actually sure that that's actually correct there. I think we'll need to get that answer. It's a good question. I don't have the great answer. I think getting the Omicron booster now is the single best thing, because you're going to get the elements there. I don't necessarily think that you're going to probably be recommended that you get a change booster schedule, and that's the one question I have. So I know you'll get the Omicron booster now. There'd be no reason to, and that's why they're not really giving the other ones, because they're just less effective now. It's like getting last year's influenza vaccination this year, and so I would look upon this more like influenza vaccinations than I would, let's say, measles, mumps, where you got the boosters and you have to go back and get your schedule and those kinds of things. And so with the influenza, didn't get it last year, you'd still get the influenza vaccination this year, and you'll have the same protection. And I think that's the likely answer for that. But I will look it up, and if it's different than that, we'll get that information.
Okay, thank you. That was a great question. And then we had someone who asked, what is the time limit to getting Paxlovid if you test positive at home for COVID?
Yeah, they say it's 5 days. And so, again, that's part of my a gripe, so to speak, with physicians and healthcare systems, because they sometimes, you know, you send a note in to provider, and 2 days later you get a response. And the response may be, well, if you're doing well, you may not need it, and then you got to give them a call. So I would encourage you, you know, to have conversations early. If you are in the group that could benefit and are indicated for Paxlovid, and you can look this up online pretty easily, to talk to someone early and make that decision early, and then make sure you get that prescription called in early, because again, I think just like Tamiflu for influenza, it really works better if you get in the first 24 to 48 hours. Much, much, much better. As do many antivirals. If you've got shingles, the earlier you start the antiviral treatment, the better the outcome and the less progression of the illness. And it's going to be the same thing here. Could you get it within the first 12 hours? Yeah. I think you could. And so particularly getting information to your providers, I think we are working and Liska and Robin working to ensure that we can also be helpful to facilitate the discussion and, if need be, facilitate a prescription.
Okay, thank you. So another comment, they comment that they believe the current rate of infection in North Carolina is at about 8%. At one time, we were focused on a safe level of 5%. I suspect the 8% is not an issue as the number of people getting COVID is less, but is there a percentage that we should be concerned with if 8% is not a concern? And if 8% is, and if 8% is actually 16% because we're not tracking at home testing. So yeah, so what happened with that whole idea that we needed to focus on a safe level of 5%, and where are we now? And what should we be hoping for?
Yeah, you know, it'd be great to get that rate of transmission to less than 5%. I actually looked at some of this data as well today. I didn't show it, but yeah, you know, we were, if you look back in March, we were, you know 25% of positivity. So those who get tested who turn out positive. So it is a degree of, you know, those coming in with other symptoms that aren't COVID being negative there. I think we've moved away from it a little bit because we've kind of moved on. We're, you know, we're not checking, for instance, COVID cases daily. We're not reporting COVID cases daily anymore. Most reporting occurs at best weekly now because it just doesn't appear to change what people are doing. And so you might say we've moved into the economy of what we do rather than perhaps what we should do. What we should do has always been informed by what we do as well. So I think we are certainly in a better place and knowing, you know, how many people are coming to the ER with COVID is also probably, you know, that's a more sensitive element there. I think when we were really trying to do social distancing and the types of policies of what we wanted to be able to figure out, we certainly were then doing that more. And I did want to show real quickly, I meant to show one little graph here, so I just want to show it real quickly here because I alluded to it. But this is the, if you look at the death rate of COVID here, and you see from the time, these are people who were unvaccinated, and you see the death rate, you know, as it went up in 2021, you know, it was a 20-fold higher, pretty much, death rate than people who were vaccinated here when vaccines, and so and the death rate, you know, went up to almost 40 times in the peak in January of this year. So, you know, the great majority of people dying with COVID in January of this year were those who were unvaccinated. What's happened since then is two things. One, death rates have come down. The other is we've got some more drugs to give to people, both in the hospital there. But you still see, even coming in now, that the age-adjusted death rate in unvaccinated is four times greater. Then here, this is the age-adjusted death rate in vaccinated, and then vaccinated and boosted here, which is a smaller number. But you see that if you're boosted, again, your death rate is very negligible. And if you're, even if you weren't boosted, but you were vaccinated, it's still very, very low here. So again, I think this is just really important information that does get a little bit lost of, you know, because I mean, as do you, and maybe some of you, I mean, I come across people who are unvaccinated, and that doesn't mean I can't still have a conversation with them. Like, you know, it's a shared decision making.
Thank you. Another question, what drugs are given to people in the hospital with COVID who have it bad enough to be in the hospital?
Yeah, some of the medications I mentioned, some of the monoclonal antibodies, some of the antivirals, sometimes, occasionally, steroids, depending on what may be going on. And in that list, I think I had about eight or ten medications. So those are the sorts of things that are done. There's more some experimental medications that would be potentially available there. Yeah, I think those are the main things. Not going to get into them. Some of the names are just, you know, they're really quite complicated. And then there's clinical trials going on. So depending on a clinical trial, they may have things. I can tell you what's not being done. You know, hydrochloroquinicoin. things that have been proven not to work, and hospitals will not give them, no matter what anyone wants or believes, because there's data that they don't work. Ivermectin not being given, doesn't work. Good data.
Yeah.
So it's still very, very tough, because I forget the number, you know, that are dying each day in North Carolina, but it's not small. I'm gonna say, I could be wrong, but something like 20 or 30 people a day could be dying of COVID in North Carolina.
And a lot of what's being done in the hospital too is just supporting, you know, your lung function, and all of those very important things that really, you know, do require someone to be in the hospital.
Oh. Yeah, they will have, you know, the ventilator settings, the lung care. There's quite a bit done to try to reduce the overwhelming pneumonia there. And that's critical. Yeah, I want to say in North Carolina, I'm looking now at the 7-day average deaths. There are almost 50 deaths every 7 days in North Carolina. So what's that, about 7 to 10 a day? Mm-hmm. And that's going to be 50 times 52, you know, 2,500 deaths in a year, something like that.
Yeah, a lot more than we'd like. So, I think we may be approaching the end of our time. If I don't see any other questions, Lisa, we will get back to you, and I'll share with the group also the information on someone who's never been vaccinated. What would their schedule look like? And I have someone at my door, so I'm going to step away. Thank you all for coming, and thank you very much, Adam. Appreciate it.
And best wishes. Stay safe, stay healthy.
Enjoy. Okay.
Thank you. Bye, everybody.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks again.
I was going to bring the boys by to get flu shots today. I can go pick them up early and get here by 6:30. Would that be okay? Okay, well, I can get them here probably a little bit earlier. Do you need any paperwork when I came tomorrow? I'll go get them and be back here by a little bit after 2. Just me and the boys. Do you want me to fill out any paperwork? Don't need to fill out anything? All right, so it's all right. And then it'll just be me and the 2 boys, and I'll go pick.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.